Our next speaker is... I need to lower this. Our next speaker is Dr. Madison. She's an associate professor of pharmacy practice at Roseman University of Health Sciences. She currently practices in a county public health department in Las Vegas, Nevada, and she's the immediate past president of the Nevada Public Health Association. Please welcome Dr. Madison. And she's going to be talking to us about student pharmacists in language services, targeting an unmet need to impact hepatitis B management in Asian Pacific Islanders.
Thank you very much for that lovely introduction. So I just wanted to make a quick mention to my other co-presenters who I thought did a fabulous job and really sort of led into this topic. A lot of what we talk about with the Asian Pacific Islander community has to do directly with the fact that we are not able to provide, or in some instances, limitedly be able to provide in-language services. So hopefully by the end of this, you guys will realize that student pharmacists are a viable option for providing in-language services. So first of all, I would like to go ahead and mention my disclosures. So these are my co-authors for this presentation. So for myself, I am a speaker for Merck, as well as I'm a member of the board for Hepatitis B Free Las Vegas. Aurora Wong, who is one of my co-authors, is the director of the board. And then my other co-author is Mark DeCerbo. Dr. DeCerbo has nothing to disclose. So first of all, I would like to go ahead and review the disease burden for hepatitis B in our API community, also identify the mission and goals for Hepatitis B Free Las Vegas, describe the nature of the partnership between Roseman University of Health Sciences and Hepatitis B Free Las Vegas, as well as discuss the creation of medical translation services through the use of student pharmacists in our API community. Lastly, I would also like to discuss some results for 2013 and some of the community events that we've done this year, and then some future steps for how this can be done in other states. So first of all, chronic hepatitis B is a leading cause of liver cancer and chronic liver disease in the United States. And males of Asian Pacific Islander descent have a 9 times greater incidence of liver cancer than their Caucasian counterparts. An estimated 2 million Americans have chronic hepatitis B, and over 50% of them, of those individuals who are affected, are of API descent. This is a disproportionate number and disease burden, considering the fact that they account for only 4% of our total U.S. population. Hepatitis B infection resulting in liver cancer and cirrhosis are preventable with complete vaccination series. So screening for hepatitis B infection with referrals for care can lead to early treatment for chronic hepatitis B and limit progression and transmission of disease. The Asian Week Foundation is a co-founder of Hepatitis B Free with Asian Liver Center at Stanford University and San Francisco Department of Public Health. This targeted API testing with the Hepatitis B Free model community was started in San Francisco and has been replicated across the country, including Las Vegas, Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, San Mateo County, Los Angeles County, Orange County, Hawaii, and other municipalities. So just to review a little bit about Hepatitis B Free Las Vegas, which took that model and sort of run with that goal that San Francisco originally created, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the mission and vision of the organization. First of all, it's to educate at-risk, hard-to-reach API communities in Southern Nevada about the risk of chronic hepatitis B. We also provide free screenings for our API and others at risk for chronic hepatitis B. We facilitate hepatitis B vaccination for those who are indicated and seek vaccine protection. We link to systems of care and deliver those who are infected regardless of health insurance status. We also encourage medical providers to routinely screen their API patients for hepatitis B in accordance with the CDC guidelines. So the vision of Hepatitis B Free Las Vegas is to earn the trust of our clients, to inspire the respect of our volunteers and partners, and to secure the engagement of API communities and medical providers in the battle against Hepatitis B. So the unmet needs of Hepatitis B Free Las Vegas just to kind of review this briefly, specifically to Nevada, of those seeking care in the API community in Clark County, approximately 90% of those surveyed stated that they had limited English proficiency. Based on this statistic, in-language services was recognized as one of the biggest unmet needs of Hepatitis Briefly Las Vegas. In 2012, a survey of 418 Roseman University of Health Science student pharmacists revealed that 34% of them stated that they were of API descent, and of those, 22% volunteered to provide in-language services. Matching the needs of the community with the unparalleled skills of my student pharmacists became a priority. Student pharmacists provide and assist the provision of services across the continuum of care, which includes medical translation to assist patients with understanding and acceptance of screening and delivery of treatment recommendations specifically related to hepatitis B. So just to give you a little bit of history about student pharmacists and why we are unparalleledly qualified to provide this service, as of 2013, there were a total of 129 fully accredited colleges of pharmacy in the U.S. and Puerto Rico. In the U.S., as of 2004, the entry-level pharmacy degree is a doctor of pharmacy. Professional components of a PharmD program are typically 3 to 4 years in length, with a majority of matriculating following a 4-year undergraduate degree or prerequisites. This education consists of extensive training in treatment, monitoring, and management of multiple acute and chronic disease states. Roseman University of Health Sciences College of Pharmacy was established and created in 1999 in Henderson, Nevada. And as of 2011 in the fall, we partnered with Hepatitis Briefly Las Vegas. So the needs assessment for Hepatitis B-Free Las Vegas includes the following. Specific activities that we conduct during our screenings include planning, organizing, and establishing screening vaccination events in culturally and linguistic-friendly venues. We promote the use through API community partners, coordinate and schedule native language-speaking volunteers from community partners for workflow, coordinate the delivery of services through medical service partnerships in conjunction with Roseman University of Health Sciences pharmacists and student pharmacists. We also manage the events. Registered clients will complete a total of 3 forms, which includes registration, consent to procedure and release form, and authorization for release of protected health information. We do laboratory testing in addition to vaccinations during these events. And we also communicate these test results through letters or email. Patients are assigned to a case manager or client advocate to navigate and establish care once a diagnosis has been made, and delivery of care is something that we pride ourselves on. So student pharmacists assist with the coordinating and scheduling of native language speaking volunteers. I, as well as my colleague, Dr. DeCerbo, assist with coordinating these student volunteers. We also coordinate the delivery of services through our medical partners, and once it's been established that the patient requires additional services, the student will follow them throughout that process and will also translate during the medical visit. And ultimately, we deliver care through vaccinations and screenings. So the partnership with Hepatitis B-Free Las Vegas and Roseman University of Health Sciences, first of all, for me, has been amazing. And I truly thank Aurora Wong every day for coming to me and saying, you know, can you help? And sometimes that's all you need is for somebody to ask. So upon enrollment, student pharmacists are offered a choice of professional pharmacy organizations to join, demographic information regarding race, ethnicity, second language skills are queried to determine future placement for community service opportunities. Student pharmacists are offered the possibility to be involved in a number of community service events, and a number of the these professional pharmacy organizations work directly with Hepatitis B-Free Las Vegas to hopefully assist with these translation needs. So student pharmacists are notified via email of upcoming screening events, along with the requested language. Typically, 2 to 3 students per language are provided, and volunteer student pharmacists are contacted directly by Hepatitis Free Be Free Las Vegas with additional instructions regarding their role at the event, which can include assistance with helping out with the paperwork for screening, for laboratory testing, because we test for hepatitis B, as well as providing vaccination and filling out the forms for vaccinations, as well as additional access to care if they are found to be positive at that time. And all volunteers are required to complete and sign a HIPAA form release regarding medical information being discussed at the event. So, the results. What have we been able to do? So we've had a total of 7 events so far this year, and this is our first event. We used one of the Buddhist temples. Actually, we have a number of Buddhist temples that we go through. So we had a total of 22 individuals screened. And as you can see here, a majority of this first screening was Vietnamese. And then we had 14 women and 8 males. Of those, 13 were found to be immune, 8 needed vaccination, and 1 was found to be positive. Our Chaya temple screening, we had 39 individuals screened. 17 were found to be immune, 19 needed immunization, and 3 were found to be positive for hepatitis B. Our next screening did a total of 40 individuals. 23 were found to be immune, 15 required vaccination, and 2 were found to be positive. As you can see here, our diversity of individuals being screened, some from China, Taiwan, Vietnam, Thailand, the Philippines, as well as the U.S. This is one of our biggest screenings. We had 86 people screened. Half were women, a little more than half were women, and we found 9 positives at this event. This was a very successful event. A little less in September, we had 37 individuals screened. A large majority of them were from Vietnam. 7 positives were identified during this event. Our Chinese Baptist Church screening, we had 67 individuals screened, 42 were found to be immune, 23 needed vaccination, and 2 were found to be positive. And our most current event, we had 56 individuals screened, 26 were found to be immune, 26 needed vaccination, and 4 were hepatitis B positive. So as you can see here, our screening totals. So 199 individuals were found to be immune. 120 were identified to get vaccination, which our student pharmacists assist with. And then 28 were positive and required follow-up for care. And our student pharmacists also assisted with the language services at the point of care with the physician visit as well. So what are our future steps? Moving forward, we're going to continue our involvement with Hepatitis B Free Las Vegas and to provide this amazing community service to our API patient population. A clinical research project is currently being developed to assess student pharmacists' involvement and future implications to their clinical practice following their pharmacy education once they've participated in these events. We also are in the process of creating a master database of languages and student pharmacists and graduate volunteers for all API languages. For right now, we have Cantonese, Korean, Mandarin, Thai, and Vietnamese. You will notice that Tagalog isn't listed here because, as stated in a previous presentation, a majority of our Filipino patient population is English-speaking. But we do have the ability to use Tagalog as well. We're also in development of sustaining this process of in-language medical information for common chronic conditions and preventative care services, and so providing documentation, written documentation in language for diabetes information, hypertension, dyslipidemia, and chronic kidney disease. We're also looking at the possibility of establishing an advanced pharmacy practice experience, specifically addressing indigent health with a focus in patients in the AAPI community and of AAPI descent. This would be a 6-week rotation in the final year of pharmacy school, working with Volunteers in Medicine of Southern Nevada, which is a free clinic, also working with Hepatitis B Free Las Vegas, and those students completing this advanced pharmacy practice experience would be involved in no less than one screening event during the rotational experience. So how can you use this model in your community? Utilizing student pharmacists, I feel, is something that maybe isn't being done as frequently as they could be. As of the fall of 2012, the enrollment of student pharmacists with a PharmD degree was over 60,000 students in the country, and over 15,000 of those students that are enrolled in a pharmacy program identify as API. So community outreach, a main goal of numerous student pharmacists are in professional pharmacy organizations, is to do community outreach as part of their pharmacy education. My student organization that I'm the faculty advisor for is the American College of Clinical Pharmacy, and then my colleague, Dr. DeCerbo, is over the American Pharmacists Association Academy of Student Pharmacists. And our chapters are accredited and are nationally recognized. So this is just a map of the colleges of pharmacy in the United States. And as you can see, there is a college of pharmacy near you. So you should be using student pharmacists. With that being said, I would like to take a moment to acknowledge my co-authors as well as my community partners. Without them, these services and the amazing community impact that we've been able to provide in Southern Nevada would not be possible. My co-authors for this presentation include Aurora Wong, Dr. DeCerbo, and the organizations that we've partnered with are Buddhist Temples, First Med Health and Wellness, of course, Roseman University of Health Sciences student pharmacists, the Southern Nevada Health District, which is where I practice and provides all of the vaccinations for our events, Volunteers in Medicine of Southern Nevada, which is the free clinic that is the link to care once these individuals are found to be positive for hepatitis B. And then these are our references and questions. These are my student volunteers. As you can see, we all need to be a hero. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to all the speakers. You can start asking your questions. We have a few minutes, and if you would let us know who it's directed to, or if it's directed to the whole panel, please go ahead. Any questions? Okay.
So it's multifactorial. So just to repeat the question that was asked, why is it that the API community is so disproportionately affected by hepatitis B? So multifactorial, a lot of it being passed through vertical transmission. So carriers not being tested, sort of the coming from other countries, and not being fully immunized. There's multiple factors, but the biggest is vertical transmission and lack of testing and lack of knowing whether or not they're positive or not is probably the biggest factor, which is part of why the big hepatitis B free movement started in San Francisco, large Asian Pacific Islander community there, and just sort of moving that movement throughout the country, just because of just the general lack of knowledge within the community of the risk and sort of the
detriment of hepatitis B. If it's left untreated, it can develop into hepatocellular carcinoma. And then, as mentioned in my presentation, the disproportionate amount of men of API descent versus their Caucasian counterparts, 9 times more incidence of liver cancer.
Okay, can you? Yes.
I'm sorry, I can't tell you that off the top of my head, but I would assume so. I'd assume that the groups with higher concordance are higher immigrant populations, and so they're also lower, they tend to be lower income, lower English proficiency. So kind of like what Darren was saying about Oakland.
Let's go there, yeah.
Yeah. Just about the hepatitis for Dr. Madison, with regards to the vertical transmission of hepatitis B, there's the usual care of doing vaccination and HPIG for the infant of those infants born to the surface antigen positive mothers, but is there anybody in our folks in the Nevada or Las Vegas area doing any treatment with medications, specifically tenofovir, to decrease further the rate of vertical transmission?
As far as from the health department standpoint, we actually have one dedicated nurse that just does all of the perinatal hepatitis transmission. And so obviously we have a nurse that goes out to all the hospitals to make sure that they are in concordance with the CDC guidelines for, you know, treatment of surface antigen positive moms. They get HBIG, the infant gets vaccinated at birth. As far as treatment and getting them into care, part of what Hep B Free Las Vegas does is once those individuals are being identified as being positive is getting them into care. So, you know, it's two separate things. Like, you know, if they, you know, were born in another country and had the vertical transmission and now are a carrier, that's a separate issue versus we have very, very, very low vertical transmission rates in this country, obviously because we routinely vaccinate and we give HBIG and we're screening at the time of delivery. But, you know, sort of beyond that, once, you know, they're in this country and individuals are, you know, they've never been screened before, and then they're found to be positive, you know, getting the linkage to care is huge so that we don't have further transmission and risk and development of negative sequelae associated with the disease state if it's left untreated. So we are actively getting those people into care, and depending on, you know, the type of, you know, hepatitis B they have, there's, you know, obviously different genotypes and different strategies for treatment. Tenofovir is definitely, you know, one of the most active, you know, antiviral medications that we have that treats hepatitis B. So as far as that specifically being utilized in all of our patients, I can't speak to that because we're really more patient-directed, and every case is treated individually. But those who are identified as positive, all of the patients that we have identified as being positive have gotten into care. Aurora tracks these people down. She will call them on the phone. She makes sure that they get to care. And regardless of if they have insurance or not, or whether or not they have legal status in the U.S., we get their therapy and we get them treatment. Absolutely.
Screening, but there are failures of the usual prevention of mother and child transmission with vaccine and HBIG, and so there are some folks that are doing treatment
with tenofovir
during pregnancy.
If they're identified during the pregnancy,
right?
Yeah. Or if they knew their status prior to getting pregnant, yes. Yeah.
There was a question over there.
Thank you very much. My question is, do you offer any incentive to the pharmacy students? So we use student volunteers as well, and pharmacy students included.
So great question. So just to repeat that for the audience, do I use any incentive for the student pharmacist to participate in these events, especially with doctor's visits, maybe being any time during the day, if they have class, et cetera? So there's a few things that we do to engage the students in coming. First of all, Aurora is great. She feeds them. She gives them, when we had really, really high gas prices, I'm sure everybody remembers that, she actually gave them a gas card as well as an incentive to come to the events. A majority of the students, once they participated in the event, actually ended up refusing because they felt like they didn't want to take anything because they just felt that the experience in itself was their payment, which I completely agree with. As far as scheduling for the doctor's visits, Volunteers in Medicine of Southern Nevada, what we've done with them is that we've scheduled it on a Friday, and so we have like a specific day and time so that we know that that's when they need it and that's when the availability is. And then our student pharmacists that go that are in their last year of pharmacy school are on clinical rotations. And so I'm not sure if you could see this, but I'm kind of persuasive, so I usually ask their preceptor if they'll allow them to have the time off for the day, and then I basically say, this is what they're going to be doing, this is definitely not out of the scope, and this is a community service, and so that's what we've really done is to sort of directly to talk with their preceptors, and then obviously if it's another faculty member, they know the importance of the community service event, and so they're more than willing to let the student have the time off for the afternoon, and honestly, they get so much out of it. Like, I have a list of students on a waiting list to do this. It's not the other way around. They're just so engaged. Like, I couldn't advertise it because they just love it. And I mean, I hope that they realize that, having the ability to speak another language is such a valuable tool. As somebody who does not speak any other languages, at least not fluently, I'm always, engaging and supporting them and saying, this is something that you need to foster because this is a skill set that, that is so valuable to you in the future. And just knowing how much of an impact we've been able to make because of the fact that we've broken down that cultural barrier because it's somebody that looks like them, talks like them. It's amazing. You can't pay for that. It's just... I'm sorry, I'm passionate about this.
There was a question on this one.
Let me give a little background about this focus group, the Filipino nurses and doctors. Actually, I had a poster presentation yesterday, but I didn't touch on that. A lot of these doctors and nurses are not primary care physicians. A lot of them are specialists. That's why we always want to connect the healthcare providers to the community, specifically the Filipino community. So, and that's one of the reasons that we broke down the focus groups into different, from doctors and nurses to health professionals, non-health, and, the other, which are, the last group is the students, which we haven't done yet. And thank you for asking that question. Surprisingly, one comment about from doctors and nurses after this was done, it was so painful to organize for them to come, to attend. So the recruitment was, took a long time. With the other health professionals, and the non-health professionals, it was easier. But we also went through their organizations, because there are, you know, medical technology organizations and so on, you know, and then dentists. So there, I worked through, since I'm very connected with the Filipino community, since I've done a survey before, you know. So we were interested in knowing how different. So that's what you're asking. Are there responses? Actually, there is not much difference. So I kind of, when I was going through my slides, I said, well, are these only the nurses, or did I kind of, you know, mix it up with other, you know? So I looked at the responses of the other two groups, the allied health and the non-health professionals. Very, very similar. Maybe just some of their comments, maybe, you know, and they really enjoyed the discussion. Some of them made jokes about, you know, diet, what they eat, you know, about the traditional foods. And then one thing too is we tried to, you know, that's why we did a survey. That was the poster's presentation. We did a survey of, you know, where they are from, kind of a demographic survey. And we want to actually write, you know, a paper on this, tease them out. You know, even we, as you notice, we broke them down into age groups, you know, the younger, less than 55 versus the over 55, because they may have different views, you know, attitudes. But overall, without doing the analysis, we've done the transcription for the other two, but we haven't done the actual analysis. But in general, very much the same concern about diet, obesity, hypertension. They stood out. Distress really stood out in all the groups, you know, the stress level and the physical inactivity, you know. They even teased me, you know, at the end. They said, how do you stay, you know, slim? And then I end up into, you know, talking about how I, you know, it's more personal, but, you know, how, you know, my physical activity level and my diet. And so, because you probably have a lot of friends who are, you know, Filipinos who are, you know, don't have a healthy weight or a healthy diet. So, and even though they're one observation too, even though these doctors and nurses, they studied, you know, they're in the medical field. And yet, they ask about, you know, they talk about the physical inactivity. It's like some of them don't practice what they preach or supposed to preach, you know. The nurses, I mean, some of them were actually, and they, you know, they joke about it. Oh, yeah, I'm in that category, overweight, yeah, category. And some of them are my friends, actually. So they're very open. That was, we had a very good experience in all four groups that we've conducted so far. They're very open. They laugh. It's, you know, even the rooms are divided, but we can hear, you know, we have trouble, you know, with the transcript, with the recording, because one group can be so loud and, you know, it disturbs the other group, yeah, even the doctors, you know. And at the end of the session, they all said, this was very helpful. It is so, you know, they felt good about participating, although it was really a challenge for me to recruit these people. I mean, email, phone call, you know. But now I think they're more aware. And one thing that they did ask is, could you give us the results? Could you present us? And we said, sure, this will be in the report, this will be written. And then, in fact, we have a plan. I'm going to present this to the Texas Association of Philippine Physicians and the Nurses Association who participated, because they really would like to, you know, to see how, you know, what the results are and how they could be more engaged, because they are not so, nurses are better. They're more engaged. They conduct health fairs. They're volunteers. But the physicians, oh, they're just busy, they're in their own practice, and, you know, they don't, you know, they're not as, you know, they're not as connected to the community, and which should be, you know, we hope they should be. I think that would help. So, and your comment, your next comment was? Right. Right. Yeah. We plan to, you know, what we learned from these focus groups, because they brought up, you know, like not having, you know, they don't go for regular checkups, which is surprising to me. Even nurses, they don't go for regular checkups. but they're talking, I think they're talking about the Filipinos in general, the community, their friends, family, you know. Even though some of them made comments about, you know, they should be going more regularly, you know. And the excuse is always, you know, they're too busy and too stressed. So we plan to have that in, you know, in the survey, include them in the survey, more about the healthcare utilization, because, you know, knowing all these, you know, kind of positive characteristics about the community, and yet, you know, we still have another 6% who delay medical care or do not, you know, seek medical care due to cost. So we want to address that, and we hope that these doctors and nurses, if they get more, when they get more engaged, then this is something that they could, you know, would be helpful to impart to the community.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Dr. Bay, and also Dr. Chang. I'm Filipino, and I sometimes forget about the cultural aspects of seeking or not seeking health care. But in your descriptions, I just saw my parents. Trying to think of better ways to help maybe that's part of the process here. Is I was just wondering about are there already examples of prevention and addressing the health needs? Because my parents, again, belong to all these social, and it's all about eating fried foods and salty things.
One comment about that, because you said your parents, they're immigrants, right?
Yes.
Yes. So they often mention that because it was not taught in the Philippines, you know, when they were back home, health was not, you know, health education was not even, you know, very few knew about health or received health education. And so it's like it was not, you know, it's part of the culture. So when they came here, they were not always conscious about the health and their kind of, you know, the cultural behaviors have been carried on here, and they continue to practice that. And these doctors and nurses said, well, they're not their priorities because they're so busy with their own, you know, lives, you know, the career, and they're all professionals. A lot of the Filipinos are professionals, and yet, you know, that's why we wanted different groups. So we would. This would be interesting to know if there are different, you know,
that was my
comments.
To you.
Yes.
Did you find any differences between U.S. born and, you know,
that's
native
one,
born?
Well, this group, they're mostly, you know, Philippine born. So when we get to the other, you know, the last group are the students. They're probably almost all U.S. born. So that would be interesting.
Yeah.
And that's also one reason we divided the group into 18 to 55 and over 55, because more likely the younger, like some of the doctors were young, 34, you know, 40, you know, and nurses in their 30s or 40s. So that's one, yeah, you're right. I'm interested in the age, you know, because I suggested that we break them down into age groups, because we may find a difference. And also, their comfort in discussions, you know, the comfort level, if they're with a group, about the same age group,
similar age cohort.
Then they may be more open, and I think that helped a lot. Yeah, and but they were, you know, joking about, oh, you go to the older group, I'll be here. Can I join the younger group? Yeah.
Any other questions? Any other questions? So I just want to wrap up, and I want to thank all our speakers for excellent presentations. I myself sort of see a theme for those of us that work with Asian American API populations, I see a theme that, you know, emphasizing prevention, because I think that's, there's a big gap. I mean, we know that, you know, especially for those that are foreign-born, not the U.S.-born, but especially for those that are foreign-born, prevention isn't part of, like, a, you know, daily dialogue, and it's just not something that they think about. So I think for those of us that work with that population, I think, again, you know, as all of you must be aware, prevention needs to be so. Thank you very much.
Can I just make one comment? As program chair of the Asian Pacific Islander Caucus, and this is my last year, I want to thank all of you for attending these sessions and for submitting abstracts and being, you know, so interested in the API health, because I'm passionate about doing research on APIs. Thank you.